Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. Certainly there are those who aren't suffering, but many are living in dark times. People I respect say that we're in the midst of another feudal age. If you're paying attention to politics, the environment, and human justice issues, you will find all of it overwhelming. Now, I don't mean to say that there aren't people working hard and effectively for change, and people who are actually learning from human history, but these people aren't running the world. It's possible that things have always been this close to the edge in different but equally critical ways. Some of us remember the nuclear arms race and the Cold War. In many ways, things haven't changed much. Humans are still close to annihilating our species and many others. Global capitalism has turned every human endeavor into a commodity. It's a gold rush. Even health and health care is marketed in a manipulative, unreliable way on both sides. It's hard to know who to trust, what to trust, when everything is about money. Is there any way to stay engaged without becoming chronically ill? What about when it's all too much? Stay tuned as I explore ways to reconnect with your own wisdom and a good sense about what you need and some nutrients and remedies that might make the journey smoother. First, an editorial by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. The CDC reports that 1 in 38 children have measurable levels of lead in their blood. That's almost 3%. Lead, as I'm sure you know, poisons nerve tissue. It also poisons the kidneys, heart and blood vessels, and reproductive organs. There is essentially no safe dose. The shocking thing is that this is good news. When the CDC started tracking lead poisoning in children 30 years ago, the figure was 8 in 10 children with measurable levels, 80%. Elimination of lead in gasoline and paint is credited with that dramatic change. Currently, attention is focused on substandard housing with vestiges of lead-based paint. This sunny portrait, if it can be called that, makes it look like we're dealing with what's left from our past. Oh, but wait. Batteries used in cars and in photovoltaic energy systems use lead. So we're still adding lead to the environment because eventually the lead has to be mined, processed, and disposed of one way or another. More importantly, the children of the people who work in the factories that produce those products have higher levels of lead in their blood than other children. On top of that, abandoned lead plants and disposal sites provide continuing exposures to those who live nearby. To close this thought on lead exposure, substandard housing, where lead-based paint thrives, working in lead factories, and proximity to abandoned lead plants are associated with low income. In other words, yet another health impairment imposed by income inequality. There is no technical reason why this health problem can't be solved, and yet it is not. Take another example of a toxin that's allegedly been eliminated from our environment, asbestos. The U.S. imports over 1,000 metric tons of asbestos each year. How can the EPA allow this? Because the chlorine industry needs asbestos to make its products. This isn't a case of corruption. The EPA has the authority to make exceptions to environmental laws when the cost of preventing the use of a toxic substance has too great an effect on commercial enterprises. This is the case with the chlorine industry. For EPA, keeping the wheels of commerce in motion can outweigh the health risks from a known toxin. Now consider an emerging toxin, nanosilver. For over a decade, concerns have been raised about nanoparticles released into the environment. Nanosilver is now added to exercise clothing in order to eliminate body odor. You exercise, you sweat, God forbid you smell. The small silver particles kill bacteria that cause smelly body parts. Little is known about the health effects on people or the environment, yet EPA gave nanosilver a so-called conditional registration so that it can be used in a growing number of products. Is there reason for concern? Yes. Nanosilver washes out of clothes and is widely dispersed throughout the environment. Since it's designed to kill odor-causing bacteria, a reasonable person might conclude that it also kills microorganisms in the soil, organisms necessary for the health of the soil itself, and the plants, including food, that grow there. A reasonable person might even conclude that those microbe killers affect our own microbiome, both on our skin and in our gut, and impair, for example, our immune response. Isn't EPA supposed to protect us from this kind of potentially harmful exposure? Yes, they are. But they, like all other government agencies, are supposed to maintain social order. There might be some kind of corruption at EPA, but that's not the source of the problem we face. Maintaining the social order means maintaining the very relations of production that the ruling class works so hard to sustain and develop in its interest. EPA and virtually all other regulatory agencies exist to make sure the capitalist mode of production works smoothly. When EPA hears that income inequality leads to lead poisoning, it is powerless to act because it hasn't the authority to do anything about it, and besides, that's not its job. If it hears that chlorine manufacturers need asbestos, EPA's duty is to maintain the orderly production of that necessary industrial ingredient. If a clothing manufacturer wants to prevent body odor, EPA must let it until there's proof, and not just reasonable concern, that there's a problem. What's called for isn't better information or smarter shopping. What's called for is seizing the means of production and turning it toward the satisfaction of human, not commercial, needs. But the lesson for me in all this is not just that our health is at risk because of the way we produce things. The lesson is that the mode of production and its social relations are the actual cause of illness. I'm not speaking metaphorically. We are conditioned to think of agents such as bacteria or chemicals or traumatic events as the cause of illness. In my view, the cause of an illness is the social relations that permit or even encourage exposure to individual agents and so cannot be separated from them. A transcript of this editorial is available at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett is a political economist and writer. He produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now to today's topic, which is when it's all too much. And I have to say that editorial was a good example of how much bad news there is about all the bad behavior concerning toxins in the environment and in products and in our food. You know, it's hard to look at any particular piece of important information in our sort of commons, our air, our water, soil, our food, that isn't tainted by, as Jeffrey called it, this sort of capitalistic drive to protect the commodification of everything. So it's very cruel and toxic, and the climate change is galloping along, and the government's not paying attention because we have this convenient economic crisis, which means that we're not allowed to do things that will make it better. And we've got news of Fukushima releasing more tainted water and oil spill and fracking and on the new oil boom. So anything you look at, it has unbearable bad news attached to it. The better news, and I was inspired to think about this by an interview that Bill Moyers did with Steingraber, who is a researcher and author, biologist, who wrote a book that's kind of the next generation of Rachel Carson. And what was interesting in her interview is that she talked a lot about how important it is for everybody to see themselves as an activist, because everybody has some skill. You don't have to be a great orator or speaker. We can all help. It can be as simple as helping whoever comes under your nose that needs your help, that you can provide, or being an inspiration for someone young or old. All of us can be activists. Change comes, as the Occupy movement has taught us, from the inside out and from the bottom up. What this means in terms of health, as I talk today about when it's all too much, is that if you put your trust in experts, you're going to end up, again, being vulnerable to this kind of economic loop. So a piece of advice that comes from probably Zen Buddhism, I think, is they teach it, is never to put someone else's head over your own. In other words, trust your experience above the pronouncements of somebody who is supposed to be an expert. That doesn't mean that people who have studied things can't be resources for you. It just means that, above all, nobody is living in your body and having your experience, and that's a very important place to view, from which to view things. This is most important when you're facing a healthcare provider, whether it's conventional or alternative. They're going to have beliefs, and so do you. And when they don't jive, it's really a good idea to ask pointed questions and do some research and wait until you're clear. Because there's a real push now to rush people into some kind of treatment, especially when there's a scary diagnosis. It's worth mentioning again that symptoms are messengers to heed, not to ignore or suppress. There are often less invasive ways to address the symptoms, the messengers, to look at what they're telling you, and some obvious, even simple reasons for their appearance. So as I've said so many times before, the first questions to ask yourself is, what's changed? You know, am I doing something new? Have I moved into a new place? Has my environment changed? Am I exhausted? Am I working too hard and now I'm exhausted? Am I grieving? Did I just start using some new technology? I will talk to people who have suddenly had an onset of symptoms in the last 2 or 3 years, and they've just started using a smartphone. And that's worth sort of stopping and looking at what new things you've added to your environment. Are you taking a new pill, whether it's a vitamin supplement or a drug? Are you taking something new, or had something new increased? Now, I'm not a physician. I'm an educator. But I do have a consulting practice, and I am seeing people with extreme diagnoses, and they want my input. And I talk to other healthcare providers, and we are all noticing a very sharp, dramatic increase of very, very serious, very fast-moving cancers in younger and younger people, and many more autoimmune diagnoses. Some of them, the test results are positive, but they have very few symptoms that would indicate that this is really happening. I had a young woman come to me with a diagnosis of scleroderma, which is a very serious diagnosis. And although her test results were positive, she had no symptoms and no family history and nothing that would indicate that this could be so. So what I'm going to explore here is whether or not the reason that we're seeing a sharp increase in these symptomatologies and diagnoses is because our immune systems are responding to the environment, and the environment has a whole raft of new irritants that are interfering with normal immune response and ramping up the inflammatory response in the body and the stress response. If all this other stuff wasn't enough, there are things that are increasing our physical stressors and making people much more vulnerable to having interruptions. So, you know, the areas that I see need to be addressed when you're looking at chronic syndromes that are triggered by chronic stress of all kinds. So psychosocial stress is also a trigger for this, but environmental triggers as well, is heart and circulation, autoimmune diseases, cancers. Certainly also the increase in these diagnoses of ADHD. There was recently an article in the New York Times that said this might really be just sleep deprivation that's causing these diagnoses of ADHD, sleep deprivation, which goes along with the syndrome we're talking about. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm talking today about when it's all too much. So I'm talking about syndromes that are related to stressors in the environment and psychosocial stress, which we're all experiencing during dark times. So, you know, what's happening when people get diagnosed, when they come in with these symptoms, one of the catch-22s that we have going on here is that if you go to a doctor with a set of symptoms, they are under a set of standards called standard of care. And if they do not follow the standard of care protocols, they will be sanctioned in some way. And if they work for a large healthcare organization or even in a private practice, they may lose access to insurance payments and all sorts of things. So they get sanctioned and harassed if they don't follow. The other thing, as you all know, is that many doctors have increasingly less time to spend with patients. So the old art of being with the patients and having a sense of how they smell, how the skin looks, touching them, talking to them, the art of medicine is on the back burner because of money and time. So what happens is that people come in and they're asking for relief of symptoms. And this is why I'm stressing the fact that looking for relief of symptoms actually puts your physician in an awkward position, because then the only thing they can do to help you is to give you drugs or to do some kind of invasive procedure. This is heroic medicine. Now, if you have symptoms of autoimmune disorders, they're going to look for ways to suppress your immune system. They're going to use steroids. They're going to use chemotherapy drugs or off-label drugs with very dangerous side effects. So the point here is to focus on diseases of chronic stress and exposures and see if there are less toxic ways to look at these things. A book I can recommend also is this book, Exposed, by Mark Shapiro, is an interesting book. We did an interview with him as well, because what's happening in the U.S. is that our standards are now so low that many companies are sending all of the products that they make that have toxins in them, you know, flame retardants, and we've had a real job trying to get rid of formaldehyde in wood products, and now what they've done at least is partially switched to phenolic formaldehyde, which off-gases less than urea formaldehyde, but it's still a carcinogen. And why is it in there? Because it's not allowed in Europe, and even China won't allow in some of these things, Mexico. So here we are getting all these products. Our cars have more toxic chemicals in the interiors. So we are getting more exposure, and that's a good book to look at if you want to be overwhelmed again some more. But let's talk instead about how to eliminate some exposures instead of compensating for them with drugs and suppressing symptoms. Jeffrey used to say that Western medicine has gotten into the habit of being like firemen rushing into a fire, removing the smoke and leaving the flames, you know. So let's go through a few of these syndromes that could be, and just sort of examine some ways to look at them. So I'm using some examples from situations and cases that have come to me recently. I recently worked with a friend's brother who was diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis. It did fairly well for a while, and then stopped responding. And the medical profession where he lives is lost interest in him. I have had other cases of multiple sclerosis come to me, and when they come very early on, the obvious thing here is you've got a condition where the myelin sheath around the nerves are being attacked by antibodies. So the body's attacking its own tissue. This is autoimmune. Now, autoimmune syndromes and diseases are triggered famously by stressors, and certainly psychosocial stress, particularly stress that happens early in life, childhood stress and trauma, and early exposures to chemicals and toxins in the environment can kind of have this cooking in the background waiting to present. When caught early, symptoms of multiple sclerosis can sometimes be controlled by simply putting somebody on a Paleolithic-style diet, which removes the antigens, the foods that are the most allergic foods that were introduced when we started to raise foods, when the agricultural revolution started. So you remove the foods and you go back to a more ancient diet of simple animal proteins, eggs, fruits, vegetables, some nuts if they're well tolerated. For the beginning of the diet, you eschew foods that are highly allergic for some people, like milk and grains and corn, to see in a 3-week period or so whether you can get some improvement of this hyperactivated immune response that's attacking the myelin sheath. See if you can reduce the allergic load. And in the same way, it's going to be important to also remove products that you're using, personal products that have fragrances in them, because as Anne Steineman, who's been on the show a couple times, discovered in her research, when she isolated these chemicals in the fragrance, these are artificial fragrances, and then sometimes call them natural fragrances, but they call them that because they've reassembled them in some kind of way so that they are molecularly similar to natural fragrances, but they're not natural. But most of them have a lot of carcinogenic chemicals in them to make the smell last. So laundry products that are scented and personal products and shampoos where the scent lasts more than an hour or so are synthetic fragrances. Natural fragrances dissipate within an hour or so unless you reapply them. And those are not a problem. The synthetic ones have, you know, benzene and toluene and things in them. So those are irritants and will also increase this amount of immune hyperactivation and allergy response. Obviously, stressors are going to increase the inflammatory response and number of aggravations that you get with MS. The other thing that's very important with MS is to make sure that the dose of vitamin D3 is very robust, that you are correcting somebody to a high normal level when you test vitamin D levels, which is 25-hydroxyvitamin D. You don't have to remember this. If you ask to be tested for vitamin D, they'll do this. But up, you want to replace up to a higher level. Has sometimes dramatic response for people with MS. A really good vitamin program with lots of antioxidants and vitamin E and vitamin C throughout the day is very important, along with the vitamin D3. Lots of omega-3, probably fish oils because they're the most direct route, and they're now mostly distilled to avoid impurities. Omega-3 fish oils, omega-3 oils, omega-3 long-chain fats are mildly immunosuppressive. So instead of taking an immunosuppressant that completely imbalances your already damaged immune system, taking extra fish oils is a more gentle form of immunosuppressant. So it's very, very useful for all autoimmune problems. And I would say anywhere from 6,000, maybe 4,000 to 6,000 to even 9,000 milligrams. It's going to be very individual and dose dependent, and you always take extra vitamin E when you're using high doses of these very delicate polyunsaturated oils. So antioxidants, all the usual good ones, the vitamin C. Another problem is getting enough magnesium in, some extra vitamin C, also soluble fiber through fruits and vegetables so that the bowel continues to move. Moving around as much as possible is very helpful. Multivitamin with extra antioxidants. GABA and melatonin should be tried for sleep disorders. And then obviously some form of relaxation, some form of meditative relaxation, and a reduction of general irritants in your environment and in your personal products and in your food. Another autoimmune disease that I see and pops up and is popping up in younger and younger people very dramatically all of a sudden with no family history is lupus. Lupus is nasty because it can attack all different kinds of tissues. It often causes extreme joint pain. I have also seen people with autoimmune lupus have autoimmune thyroiditis, which is antibodies attacking your thyroid gland, so they often work in tandem. I've just recently learned that an iron overload, so testing your iron levels both with the usual hemoglobin and hemocrit, but also probably checking your serum ferritin, which means iron, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, serum means the blood serum ferritin, because if it's very low, it means that the liver is not doing its job of sequestering, in other words, hiding the iron from the circulation. Or if it's very high, it's a problem. And if the other things are too low or too high, there's an iron issue going on. And iron can attack the skin in lupus. So that's an undiscussed thing to look at. Again, fish oils for immunosuppression and all of the above for vitamin, a good vitamin program, strong antioxidants. I love alpha-lipoic acid. B12 and DHEA is also been shown to help. Again, you want to test these levels. With all autoimmune diseases and all of these stress-related diseases, you also want to check and rebalance all of the hormones, including thyroid and sex hormones in both genders, because an imbalance in sex hormones can cause an increased stress response or also can be reduced because of the stress response. Autoimmune thyroid disease is very, very common. We've got Hashimoto's, which is antibodies attacking one of the systems. It's also microchromosomal antibodies attacking. For autoimmune Hashimoto's, you want to check the TPO TPO with antibodies, which tests a thyroid peroxidase level. But we've also got Graves, and obviously not only stress, all the things that we said about autoimmunity, irritants in the environment, all the usual things to avoid with the fragrances and the other things. You can't smoke. When people have lots of dental x-rays or other x-rays, it's seldom the case that the radiologist will remember to put a thyroid collar on your neck. And if you've had a lot of x-ray, your thyroid may be damaged from that. So it's always worth checking that. Graves' disease is transient. It is hard to live with. You're racing and sweating and losing weight and your gut is crazed. But it isn't always necessary to take a thyroid suppressant drug, and it's never a good idea to use radiation for this. It is transient, and there is a good book called Graves' Disease by Elaine Moore with two R's, M-O-O-R-E, and we've done several shows with her. It turns out that you can treat this with calming herbs and homeopathics and wait for the storm to disappear. Can be transient. You can get that kind of reaction also with other autoimmune thyroid diseases. Lower the allergic load, increase your protein, increase your zinc, your selenium is important, and iodine deficiency often is causative in the case of thyroid disease, not having any iodine. Once you've got the disease, you have to be careful using iodine because it increases uptake of iodine, and in the cases of these diseases, it's sometimes necessary to add in thyroid to stop the thyroid from trying to work because it's inflamed. You want to quiet it down and give the thyroid hormone instead exogenously so that the thyroid quiets and the inflammation backs away. I want to remind you as I'm going that I'm doing a show on when it's all too much. So what I'm trying to talk about here are chronic syndromes and illnesses that erupt from overexposure to environmental toxins and psychosocial stress, which all of us are experiencing at this time. I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I think it's a good time to take a very short musical break. So I will come back to this discussion right after this. Stay tuned.
Today, you saw the face of God. Would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low, you cannot fall. Would you change? Would you change? How bad, how good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction would cause an effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain, makes you forgive and forget, makes you change.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show today called When It's All Too Much, and I'm discussing different kinds of chronic symptomologies and syndromes and illnesses that are triggered by stress and chronic toxic exposures in the environment. One of the most obvious and often missed diseases of stress is diabetes. People don't think of diabetes as a disease of stress, but the mobilization of blood sugars is in fact a stress response. So it's so odd that this is rarely discussed, but obviously mobilization of your fight or flight system, your sympathetic nervous system, is primary in diabetes. Certainly it's true that if people are self-medicating with enormously sweet sugary foods, and there's no question, we've been hearing a lot about salt, sugar, and fat. In fact, we were thinking of doing a show called Salt, Sugar, and Fat, Oh My, because you know, it depends on what form of these foods you're eating. You can't, salt is extremely important, particularly with people who are under stress. Salt is important for the adrenal gland to work. And if you're experiencing some edema because you're eating way too much salt, or you're eating a corrosive form of salt, which is sodium chloride instead of sea salt, then, you know, you can take some extra potassium, because potassium and sodium balance each other. There's a pump. So sugar is in fruit and fresh fruits and vegetables, not a problem when it's eaten in that form. And fat, undamaged, unprocessed fats that haven't been damaged by high heat or chemical extractions and things like that, actually control blood sugars and control the stress response and quiet down the metabolic shift that we have under stress. So diabetes. Now, type 1 is an autoimmune disease. This is the body is now attacking the beta cells. And again, you know, any kind of stressful environmental situation or psychosocial situation in childhood could make this come up more readily. It does run in families, the propensity, but your family history is not a blueprint for the way your body is going to be built. It's vulnerabilities, but how you live your life is what's going to imprint your body and have it function the way it does. It's going to be an expression of the way you live. Now, type 2 diabetes is never thought of as autoimmune, but in my observation working with type 2 diabetics a lot, and I have worked with type 1s as well, there does seem to be a kind of autoimmune-like component to it, particularly if it came on really early in life. These people are almost incomplete type 1s. So if this is a long time problem, it's been since very young adulthood, that these people also tend to have thyroid problems as well, and certainly other imbalances in the hormone system. So the Paleolithic diet in a starch-free version is critical for this type of situation. There is no way to sort of get around not eating foods that provoke a blood sugar response. So you're kind of reliant on eating 50 or so percent of your calories in undamaged natural fats, and having good quality protein throughout the day, and restricting the amount of vegetables because they are a form of starch, and for some diabetics, very small servings of fresh fruit, not the real starchy ones, can work, especially if you have some nuts or some nut butters with them. But even nuts can have too much carbohydrate. It's also essential if your blood sugars are high to eat early in the day and to stop eating probably by 6 o'clock and not eat close to bedtime. In fact, even normal people eating very late at night, you're actually imbalancing your metabolism and raising your blood sugar. So if that's happening all the time, that's a good thing to see if you can reschedule your life a little bit so you don't eat late, because it really does do a number. It does tend to make people gain a lot of weight and change their metabolism. Now, some things that help nutritionally along with the Paleolithic diet without starch is, now I should mention that there are very dramatic new products coming out. There are nutraceuticals coming out all the time. Oh, we've discovered, we've isolated this from this, and we've taken this from that, and we give you a high dose, and it costs a lot of money, and blah, blah. Most of the diabetics that I've met don't respond well to all these fancy things. Some people respond to some of the herbal things. Mostly I don't see good response, but that doesn't mean it's not worth trying. What I know does work is taking 5,000 micrograms of biotin a day. Biotin is a B vitamin. It's also very good for the hair and the skin. Very good for diabetes. And probably at least 1,000 micrograms daily of a form of chromium picolinate. It's actually chromium called trichromium, and it comes with cinnamon. Trichromium with cinnamon. The cinnamon also works. That's very helpful. High doses of antioxidants, lots of alpha-lipoic acid, all the B vitamins, all the minerals, all the usual vitamins, and trimethylglycine, TMG, to get the methylation going again. Essential fatty acids, vitamin E, and high doses of vitamin D. Again, if you're dosing high, check your levels. Make sure you're not, because too much of a good thing is not good either. Carnitine, I should mention with multiple sclerosis, carnitine is probably really helpful for both the brain and the muscle issues. And brain disruptions in all of the autoimmune situations can be helped by using phosphatidylserine, not phosphatidylcholine. I know you're going to want me to spell phosphatidyl, and I did somewhere on this sheet. I'll come back to it and spell it. Oh, here it is. Okay, got it. Grab your pen. Phosphatidyl, phosphatidyl. Phosphatidyl. So phosphatidyl. Serine, S-E-R-I-N. Phosphatidyl serine. Very good for brain function in all of these syndromes and under stress and whatnot. These are lipids that occur naturally in the brain. That's one of the reasons we do need good fats. Now, the other things that are obvious along with cancer, not cancer is not obvious in terms of stress. Most of the research that's been done isn't a clear association, although your body can't function well in times of exhaustion and chronic high stress. But the toxic exposures are directly associated with cancers. And we're now seeing, I recently did a show because young women have been carrying their smartphones in their bras, and everyone's saying, oh no, the smartphone's inconclusive. The research is inconclusive. And now what we're finding is young women, 18 to 21, putting the phone in the bra and carrying it that way, are developing very fast, very aggressive breast cancers with no family history. So if that doesn't show bioactivity, I don't know what it will take to prove this. But we're seeing a lot of cancer with the wireless revolution. I'll come back to the wireless revolution, as you can expect I will, in a moment. Let's move to heart. Heart symptoms, again, part of the wireless revolution. People are having enormous amounts of hyperactivation of their central nervous system, palpitations, arrhythmias, missed heartbeats, people hearing a heartbeat in their ear, and having lots of heart symptoms. And then their blood pressure is going up and their heart rate is going up. So these are problems of stress. These problems, when this is happening, this is vascular. This is where the whole arterial blood flow, the whole vascular system is affected by the stress response, and including these stressors in the environment. That makes the blood more clotty. So somebody recently contacted me about hemorrhoids. Somebody wanted me to do a show on hemorrhoids. Well, hemorrhoids are a vascular problem, and there are different things like zinc deficiency is important, and obviously people who do certain kinds of work are at risk, standing all day, sitting all day, things like that. And there are lots of remedies you can find, both homeopathic and herbal, to help with it. But it's a situation where the blood is a little bit clotty. It can also happen when the allergic response is high because the tissues are irritated. But all these conditions are triggered by a stress response. So the problem here with the wireless, as I said, is not only does it increase hyperarousal and mobilize the sympathetic nervous system and decrease parasympathetic so people can't sleep, also increases heat shock proteins, which is a clear indication that the body has gone into a shock state, which is an extreme stress state. So heat shock proteins have been measured a lot in these situations. And here's your fight or flight response. It's also very, very inflammatory. It's extremely inflammatory. And that's a huge factor here. Lots of heart symptoms. Again, before you do invasive treatments like statin drugs or stenting, which means that you don't ever remove the stent and you have medications to keep the stent from clotting, you will have to take for the rest of your life, and they do become infected. Try mild exercise. If you have angina, just walk through it, but do it mildly. Do start where you are. Do various obvious forms of stress reduction. Vitamin therapy, all the sorts of things that I've been talking about are important for heart patients as well. The trimethylglycine, if you're tired and wired. The EFAs, you know, the essential fatty acids. Not, you don't have to do the high doses that you do with autoimmunity, but vitamin E and fish oils do not thin the blood to the point where you're going to have a problem. But if you are taking blood thinners, you want to make note of that. Blood thinners destroy your vitamin K. Vitamin K is not a clot-inducing vitamin. It's a vitamin that protects your bones from calcium, makes the calcium deposit in the right places instead of ending up in your heart valve, the calcium. Vitamin K also protects the integrity of the walls of your vascular system to prevent you from having a stroke or a rupture or an aneurysm. So vitamin K is in dark leafy greens, but you can take it and should do so. The other really important heart vitamins that are destroyed by the medications given to heart patients is carnitine, muscle strength again. It's also in red meat, but can be taken in capsules and should be taken in higher doses anyway. CoQ10, coenzyme Q10, high doses, 100, 150, three times a day. Weight loss, check the hormones in women and men, both too much estrogen, although estrogen in women is protective of their hearts. Women have a protective effect from estrogen, but if it's not balanced with progesterone, you're going to be extremely hyper-aroused and nervous. When you do add the progesterone in, it's calming and it balances the estrogen. In men, the estrogen goes up with weight, increases in weight. Men pick up estrogen. It can test their testosterone. In both genders, testosterone keeps the blood from getting clotty. So testosterone protects bones and it keeps the blood running. It's very important to check to make sure all your hormones are balanced. So one of the things that's particularly difficult here with this wireless revolution is that it's a gold rush. People are talking a lot about how our things are changing and you have to keep up. And So this wireless technology is now being used for everything. It's just tried. Some people have tried and failed to be able to get a landline service in even areas that are close to rural areas. It's getting very difficult. So it's being used for more and more things. I'm getting notices from different organizations that I stay in touch with to get news that there are even new products coming out that just make your mouth hang open. They're so ridiculous, you know. I don't even want to go down the list, but it means that there's going to be wireless things in places that you've never thought to look. Look for the word smart. It'll give you a chance to figure it out. So it's very hard to avoid wireless, and what I see is that, you know, you get a lot of people saying, well, it's natural for us to be exposed to radiation. It's natural to the environment. Well, it's never been in our environment in these levels, these different levels, and they've never been delivered in these ways, and there's never been so many of them coming from so many sources. So human beings, like birds and other animals, have magnetite in your brain, and it orients you. And these fields are not quite native to us or to the animals and creatures around us that are being affected. So they are discombobulating, and they're being delivered in ways that are certainly not natural for us. So you can take something like, now this is not radio frequency, but you take regular wired electricity and you wire incorrectly, and you will end up with transients and spikes and noise on your line. This is called dirty electricity, and this is increased when you're in an environment around smart meters and other things. Your dirty electricity is increased, and you can have wiring from a source that's completely benign and sensitive person has no symptoms. You wire it incorrectly and suddenly lots of symptoms. So it's the delivery of the technologies that can cause problems. These wireless technologies are pulsed. They use switching power sources. So the body never gets to sort of rest. And the low-level exposures are very difficult for the body to discern whether or not this change in your the wiring of your own electro status of your body, which is electric as well, suddenly these fields are low enough so that they invade and the body can't tell the difference between what's native and what's foreign. So the delivery is not native. Let me just say again, I'm Lena Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness, and I'm talking about when it's all too much. Now, obviously, you know, this is like so many things. You know, cancer therapies, chemotherapy, and radiation have never been properly tested. They've never been subject to clinical trials. And so it is with all this wireless technology. The studies that were done by the military on radar. They found out that it was extremely dangerous. They bombarded a embassy to test it as a non-lethal weapon and discovered the symptoms that they're finding in electrosensitives now. And it's all just going ahead anyway because it's a gold rush. It's just making too much money. So, if you are feeling any of the following symptoms, you ready? Hyperarousal, as I said. Insomnia, can't sleep. ADHD. Heart palpitations. Arrhythmias, so racing hearts or missed beats. High blood pressure and pulse. Dizziness. Headaches. And pressure on the head, and pressure in your ears, nosebleeds, seizures, depression or extreme anger and rage reactions, stomach and gut pain and discomfort, ringing in your ears, confusion, cognitive problems, trouble finding the right words. These are just a few of the classic symptoms of electrosensitivity. And the numbers, as I've been trying to say, are increasing. And what's happening among electrosensitives is where they were able to go out and do things before, now they can't. They have to just try to protect their house. So how do you protect yourself? Well, this is a good time, even if you're not electrosensitive, even if you have very few of these symptoms, but you feel overwhelmed a lot and it's just, there's just too much. It's just too much all the time. This is a good time to regularly unplug and spend some time in a natural surrounding. Contact with nature is an extremely powerful anecdote to all of this stuff that we're talking about. Going to a place where you can watch the ocean and the animals, or a wood where you can hear birds and smell the plants, and a place where potentially there is less of this stuff, a less crowded area, connecting with nature is a very powerful thing to do for anybody experiencing overwhelm. I recently heard a discussion about people as they age losing their spouses and being left alone, and how difficult their lives are after that. And some people called in and said, these were mostly women, they said, I connect with nature and it's okay. I just go out in nature and I don't feel alone. I feel companioned and I feel relaxed and buoyed by the beauty of the world. So for everybody, connecting with nature is extremely medicinal and helpful, and increases your cognitive function, decreases your blood pressure. It's quite amazing. So this is a good time to do that, and to do it in any way you can. And even, you know, if you can find a place where it's not, where there aren't a lot of people, and it seems pretty quiet, even taking your feet off or laying on the ground and kind of grounding yourself can help. Although grounding yourself these ways, or using grounding products in an area where the ground is polluted now, as it is in most areas that are populated, the ground is now full of all kinds of stuff from all of the technologies and the infrastructures of the smart meters and the towers everywhere. So that's not going to be useful, but in a quiet place it would be. Some other things to try if you are electrosensitive. You can buy a shielded baseball cap. It is not an aluminum hat. It is a hat that has some fabric on the inside that has some silver threads or some metal threads in it, and it takes the load down just a tad on your head. I wouldn't necessarily suggest using shielded clothing, because I've been told that you can have the fields collapse on your skin from the clothing next to your skin. Shielding your house is difficult. It takes a lot of trial and error, and you have to make sure there is no form of anything producing RF in your house. If you do that, oh, you trap it. But it would be as simple as putting aluminum window screening on the windows and then grounding with a grounding rod, unless your ground is really dirty, then just putting the stuff, if you're trying to keep it out, but then you better not use a cordless phone, for instance. Women report to me that avoiding not wearing metal jewelry helps a bit, because metal is conductive. Some people also have found that removing the metal in their mouth helps as well. A Philips Stein frequency wash, I'm not getting any money from them, I just tried one of these, and they do tend to calm a bit. Extra calcium and magnesium at bedtime. Melatonin at bed often works. GABA, tryptophan at night, also helps, because these other systems may be getting in the way. Homeopathic remedies, there's one called mobile phone. There's another called Electricita. And there's another, which is germanium. Germanium, G-E-R-M-A-N-I-U-M. Germanium is a mineral that helps the body to handle fields. The flower essences, Yarrow Environmental Formula, helps. It's a liquid formula. It's made by FES. Removing starchy, sugary foods, taking a multivitamin, extra vitamin C through the day. Again, minerals, calcium and magnesium are affecting. Getting some dirty electricity filters for your home. These are capacitors for your plugs or your work plugs, from either Stetzer filters or Greenwave filters. I like the Greenwaves myself personally. Generally, amino acids for calming are GABA, taurine, tryptophan. There's something called Rescue Sleep that's very good if you can't sleep. GABA, 1,000 milligrams or 500 to 1,000 milligrams of tryptophan and melatonin at bed, because sleep is essential for this. All B vitamins help with methylation, detox, and energy. And again, there's nothing that helps you as much as a good night's sleep, rest and recovery. A body work of all kinds and various meditative methods are very important as well. Again, balancing your estrogen to testosterone, estrogen to progesterone levels. Estrogen is very excitatory. Checking to make sure you don't have a thyroid disease, and staying connected walking outside, connecting with nature, it's essential and most healing, even if you are solitary and maybe a lonely person. And also, you know, gosh, give yourself a break. Don't judge yourself about where you are. Just keep learning and stay curious because, boy, we just don't know, do we, about a lot of stuff. So sometimes when we think we know a lot, we miss out on things. We scoff at things that we don't understand. And you could miss something really important because clearly there's much more going on than meets the eye. So I hope I've given you some ideas here. The main take-home idea here is that when you get symptoms, instead of suppressing the symptoms, follow the trail. It's like a trail of breadcrumbs in the woods. Follow the trail and see where it leads, because either emotionally or because of exposures or because of changes in your environment, there's likely to be something which is changing the way things happen. And also keep in mind that following symptoms alone can be confusing too. So sometimes testing hormones and experimenting with diet and things. But you can use your body as a laboratory. And certainly there are plenty of resources. If you do see a physician, don't expect them to step out of their milieu to be able to meet you where you are. Use them as a resource. If you want to get some testing done, do that. But be an educated consumer. And don't expect them not to be using the system that they're trained in. It's unfair, really, to do that. It is possible sometimes. People constantly ask me for healthcare providers. I don't have a referral list. It's very hard to find somebody that's compatible, but sometimes people who are not specialists, the people who are nurse practitioners, the people who are physician's assistants, or naturopaths sometimes, although naturopaths can be really entrenched too on remedy. But choose somebody that you will listen to you and will cooperate with you instead of lording over you like a deity. They are well educated, but you can be well educated too. So those are the main areas to think of. Remember that a diagnosis doesn't mean you have to follow an invasive treatment plan. It may sometimes be necessary to do an invasive treatment plan, and you will know for yourself when that's true, but it's always good to take the extra time to explore things before you jump into something that will have a lasting effect on your long-term aging and immunity and stuff. So you want to tread lightly when looking at invasive things, but you know, sometimes if you have to do something to save your life, you do, but investigate and always try the simplest things first. Like my mother used to say when she was very wise a few times, if you don't feel well, rest and then see where you are. Because once you begin to get rested and calmed, you'll think more clearly and you'll have a better sense of what to do next. So thanks for listening to this. And I'm Lena Berman. You can visit our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, for access to, 500, 600 archive shows with the use of our library card. You can find information there about our practice and a free stream of this week's show, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. We also have a search engine, and we have topics, and you can search under those things, too, to find what you're looking for. It's all at yourownhealthandfitness.org. You can email us if you do need to contact us. Please use email first, admin, at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by me, Lena Berman, and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett sitting next to me here. So please remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.